Hey guys, I'm Calvin L. Williams, and this is Documenting the Journey. We talk to operations and thought leaders about what are their greatest challenges, what they did to overcome, and what are they most excited about for the future. Join us on this journey and run a better business, create more value, live a better life, and be inspired by the spirit of continuous improvement.
I'm very fortunate today. I feel fortunate and humbled to be here with my good friend from another land, DJ Duarte. What's up, DJ? How you doing? Good morning.
Hey, Calvin. How you doing? It's an honor to be here with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm saying good morning. It's morning for me, but I'm guessing it's evening where you are, huh?
Yeah, it's evening over here. Yeah.
So you're in Japan, right?
Yeah, I'm in. A lot of people don't know how Japan is structured, but if you look where Tokyo is at, I'm about 1,200 kilometers south of Tokyo.
Oh man.
So I'm in a very rural part of Japan, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, how is it? I was watching Karate Kid 2 with the kids just the other night.
Yeah.
And I think that's Okinawa, but, you know, my kids and I, we really don't know the difference.
It is Okinawa, yeah. And that's probably another 700 kilometers south of me.
700 kilometers, wow,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Very cool. So is it tomorrow where you are? Today it's the 9th of June. Where is it where you are?
It is the same here. It is the 9th of June, but it just happens to be nighttime and you're in the morning, right? You're early morning.
Yeah? Okay. So you get the sun before we get it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. The sun rises right here on Camp Fuji. Yeah. Or Mount Fuji, I should say. Yeah.
So is it safe to say you get the first sunrise in the world?
It's what everybody sort of says, and it's the luckiness of Fuji-san, which is the tallest mountain here in Japan.
Yeah, interesting.
So everybody sort of climbs up there for the New Year's and tries to get that first sunlight of the new year. It's a really special occasion to do that, yeah.
Excellent. Japan is certainly on my list of things to do, my bucket list.
Oh, you got to get over here for sure. Yeah, I got to get you over here.
I know. Especially being a continuous improvement guy, you got to do Japan, man. It's just a must do, right?
Absolutely. Especially just to get that burning amber lit again, you know. Sometimes right. We lose it, right? Sometimes we lose
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very cool. Okay, DJ, you got a lot going on. I know you're a busy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your story, right? Because you got a real interesting story of, you know, starting your professional journey here in the U.S. and then moving over to Japan and then sort of settling in there and still doing a lot of great work in the continuous improvement space. So tell me about your journey and how you started and how you got to where you are now.
It is definitely a unique journey. I can tell you that in the early 80s, I was fortunate enough while I was in the Marine Corps that I was selected to be part of a program called the Total Quality Leadership Program. And basically that's total quality management, but because it's the Marine Corps, they called it leadership, right? So, and I got to go back to the United States and learn from the man himself, Dr. Deming.
There you go.
I got to do like 3 or 4 different workshops with him out of San Diego. And after that, I became what you might know as a Tiger Team facilitator.
Yeah, okay.
So I would drop into different places all over Department of Defense and do optimization Kaizen blitzes to try to reduce the cost of operations. Yeah,
is that right?
That's pretty much what it was all about, yeah.
Man, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed, you know, learning in San Diego, but I also enjoyed landing in Washington, Everett, Washington, or going out to Diego Garcia in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Or just doing optimization stuff right here in Japan and in Korea. So
yeah, wow.
It was a really, really good experience for a while.
Yeah, man. So being someone, you know, I don't know if I'm quite a millennial. I'm either the oldest millennial or the youngest Gen Xer. I still don't know which one I am.
Yeah, I don't play that identity stuff, so
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Well, well, you know, I just think back and realize how privileged I am when it comes to continuous improvement, sort of coming in at a stage where the lexicon is already developed pretty well, the methods and the tools are already fairly well designed.
Yeah.
I imagine that when you started in the game studying with Deming, you know, a lot of that stuff was still pretty nebulous and had not really taken shape yet.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the 7QC and the 7 management planning tools, so the 14 total tools that are still out there, that's what I learned on first. And of course, all learning about the statistical probabilities and doing analysis that way. So yeah, that's where the root is. But there's so much more to it than just collecting the information and driving towards cost reduction, as you well know there, Calvin.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So where are you at in your journey and understanding of, you know, how companies should approach continuous improvement, some of the biggest challenges they face, and how do you see companies overcoming some of those bigger challenges? Like, where are you at in your professional journey?
Well, I think to gain a little bit more insight on that, I would probably need to just elaborate a little bit more on my past, because I spent 11 years, 4 months, and 2 beautiful days in the Marine Corps, and I chose to leave the Marine Corps. Yeah, exactly, to the day.
It seems like you were counting the minutes.
No, it was. I knew it was my time to move on, and as it was changing, I felt a passion to do what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I decided to jump ship for, and I went out and got me a government job and started doing this for the government on a smaller scale. At one time, I became a civil servant, a GS employee, a GS-12. So I rose to a pretty high-level position. And I was the director of the Innovation Improvement Office right here in Iwakuni, Japan.
Yeah. Wow.
And
very cool.
Of course, I brought a lot of people over here. And I got to meet a lot of people that were in Japan that were doing these type of kaizens and these type of monotsukuri improvements, you know, the manufacturing kind of improvements. And all of them always said, DJ, come on, join us. And I just wasn't sure of myself, and it just took me a while. I guess I had to get a little bit of grayness on my forehead, I mean, on my head, that is. And that allowed me then to meet a lot of talented people. And I'm fortunate enough to have been mentored by 3 very well-known Japanese senseis. One is Masaki Imai from Kaizen Institute. So I actually worked in Kaizen Institute for almost 3 years.
Awesome.
The other was Isayo Kato-san, who is basically known as the father of TWI for Toyota.
Mm.
I got to actually spend weeks with this guy around the world as he pulled on my ear, because he's a very short guy. He'd pull on my ear and say, hey, tell him this, and I'll do this, you know.
So you speak Japanese too?
Hi, Nihongo Shabarimasu. Yes, I do speak Japanese.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't speak it perfectly, because I want to make sure I maintain my U.S. mentality and presence.
Right.
But my heart and my mind is leaning more towards the Japanese way of doing business, so. It's about that humility factor, yeah?
I got a quick story. Mm-hmm. When my daughter was born about 3 years ago, my mother-in-law came to stay with us from Colombia, right?
Okay, yeah.
So she speaks only Spanish, no English. And she was helping out at home and doing a lot of the cooking. So as you can imagine, for a three-month period, my Spanish went from near nil to quite well.
Yes.
Because I realized that if I was going to eat, I better learn some Spanish. So,
yes, yes.
I imagine you went through a similar experience.
Yeah, there's actually a real belief system around that. I mean, they say if you come to any foreign country and you want to learn the language, immerse yourself in it for 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
And just be a part of that. Don't have any access to any other English speaking kind of things.
Right.
And you will just, you'll soak it up like a sponge.
You will, right? And, out of survival.
And it doesn't matter how old you are either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And you know, the first couple of weeks is the toughest. And then all of a sudden, you wake up one day, you start dreaming in the local language. But yeah, keep going. TWI.
Yes. So I got to meet these guys. They took me around the world. I joined several consulting firms. I was pretty much a vice president in one of them, and took over most of Asia and all of their sites. And then eventually I decided to take on more risk. And in our business, what that really means is that I'm getting all the clients, you know, I want to make more money.
There you go.
I started my own company in September of 2019 with one of my friends and colleagues. We created what is called Makoto Flow Limited.
Makoto Flow. And yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So the whole essence of what Makoto Flow is all about is the creation of trust in the way things are to be done.
Interesting.
A lot of people don't really know truly the spirit behind Kaizen. They sometimes don't pronounce it correctly or don't even know the intent behind it. They think it's just change for good, which it's so much more. It's about flowing things naturally. It's about synchronizing all of the systems together. And then I guess the underpinning component is the respect and the admiration for the people that are trying to create the value for the organization.
Man, I love
that. That's where we focus.
Yeah. I love that mindset.
That's where we focus. Yeah.
So last time we talked, right, we talked just recently, and you mentioned that there's 3 levels of Kaizen. And I think that's something that not a lot of people understand, that component also. Can you talk through the 3 levels of Kaizen?
Yeah. So, you know, when you really think about the entire Toyota management system, it's actually comprised of 4 basic circles. You got TPS, which is for production, and that has the JIT and the Jidoka and the Hijunka in it. And then you got TPM, which is all about, you know, machining and autonomous maintenance, right? And keeping up your equipment. And then you have what is called TQM, which is about the quality management aspects. And then you also have what is called the total talent development piece. So we call it the TDP, right?
Okay.
They spend an enormous amount of time educating people on doing different levels of Kaizen. So we say that the first level of Kaizen is what we call a spot Kaizen. It means it's an individual that's doing something on their own, or you're doing it with someone else, because the true spirit of Kaizen means you're always collaborating with someone else to make something better.
Right.
Yeah. It's not just yourself.
Absolutely.
Even though the Japanese kanji says to, you know, sacrifice yourself and for the greater good of others, there is a smaller Kaizen there. And these are the things that we don't normally capture as these small Kaizens. Yeah.
Right.
And then when you get to the second tier of Kaizen, it's more events-based. It's more like 2-3 days, maybe sometimes all the way up to 10 days of activities you do with people, cross-functional teams, that allow you to improve a process, an area within your organization. And you come up with all these creative ideas and you implement those ideas in a very short period of time. And in our way, and the way I was taught, is it's not done in 5 days, it's done in 30 days. Everything is complete in 30 days because then it's sustaining.
I think a lot of folks think about that as like the Kaizen Blitz format, right?
Yeah, it is. Exactly. So, you know, and I don't take nothing away from that methodology of going in on a Monday and having everything changed by Friday. It just, I've seen the lack of sustainability with that over time.
Right. Because, yeah. You really never, I think really to transform a process or make a sustaining change to a process, you got to change the habits.
That's right.
That led up to the process that was, right?
You nailed it.
There's the behavioral piece.
In fact, I definitely wanted to share a little bit about that with you today on how we do it too. But let me get back to the third one, yeah? Mm-hmm. So the third level is what we really call a project type of Kaizen. And this is more of it's more of the organizational top-down approach, whereas the spot Kaizens are bottom-up and the event bases could be bottom-up or middle-up. Project Kaizens are top-down. They're very strategic in nature.
Yeah.
They're pretty large. They're usually 4 to 6 months long. And they have huge returns. They're usually breakthrough initiatives that they're trying to adopt.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's typically how I share with people and how to get them to do things better in their working ways.
Man, that is neat. So is that the method that you observed at Toyota? Is that what they do? Or is this something that you've sort of developed as part of your own journey?
Yeah. So a little bit about me. I've never worked in Toyota. I've toured all their plants in Japan. I know a lot of Toyota senseis. This is what was imparted upon me. And then during my times in various Japanese companies, I learned from their senseis, which is their executive leaders or their project leaders.
Okay.
And this is how they drive it.
Right.
They welcome every small improvement.
Man.
If they can categorize it, they will. I'll give you a great example. In a company called Ricoh Unitech, Ricoh Copiers, right?
Yeah.
They have these awards that they give out to people who do Kaizens. So all you have to do is put on like a half a sheet of paper, the before and after of what you did, who you showed it with, who you worked with it on, and you get some sort of reward for it because you're sharing that I improved my job this way and it helps the person down the line from me,
yeah,
downstream, with their job as well. That's why it's considered a Kaizen, yeah?
Interesting.
And then they got big prizes too, like the President's Prize because it had the biggest impact on the company. And then they got the Falcon Prize for, you know, the one that soared the longest and had the biggest returns for us. You know what I mean?
You know, I tend to like those kind of models because the economics is great for the company, right?
Mm, yeah.
You make an improvement and you get a one-time reward, but that improvement pays dividends for the company perpetually.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, you should see some of the people that come on. One of our services is tours around Japan. Yeah. And they go in there and it's like, so how many Kaizens did you do so far this year? And let's say it's February 13th. And they go, 922. And we have exactly 98 people in our company.
Wow.
Dang. So yeah, it just once it becomes a habit, I love what you do, Calvin. I mean,
yeah.
The way you're trying to get to do small things every day.
Right.
That is the best way to get everybody involved.
Yeah.
My focus is not necessarily always that. It is eventually, it gets to that point, but my focus is always with the leaders, getting the leaders to think like that,
right?
How to get their people to be involved. That's where I truly focus, because that's where the real minutia, if you may, the Muda or the Moody or the Muda exist. Yeah.
Yeah. That's powerful, man. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
No worries.
So what are you working on now? Like, what's on your plate now? What are you sort of building? What's the next big thing for DJ?
Thanks for asking, man. I got to tell you, I'm doing something that is just changing my world, and I hope to be changing a lot of other people's worlds because of it. And that is, in September of 2019, I decided that I needed to get more partnerships within my business. You know, the old cliche, your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
So I had 614 followers back then. I now have over 13,000.
Wow.
And with that, my partnerships prior to that, from 2016 to September 2019, was only 5. And now I have 21. And I have 21 active partners. And
well done.
Hopefully one day we might be with Calvin too, right?
So, well, you know, the door is always open for you, DJ. Just come on in.
Thank you, sir. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Humility is teachability, brother.
Yeah. Very cool.
So some of the things we're working on, obviously, I'm working with some folks down in the southern part of the United States, working with the healthcare system to sort of get them to drive the strategic intention of the whole idea of Kaizen. Mm. Down in South America, we're trying to get a rare earth manufacturer to adopt the TPS practices in their manufacturing sites. I'm working out there in England with a very great guy building a coaching program designed specifically for either general managers or internal CI people that are hired to carry the torch, if you may.
Right.
And as well as consultants, other consultants that want to develop their own capabilities.
Yeah, powerful.
So, I mean, I'm all over the place.
I see.
And I'm loving it because it's really given me that energy that I need to go to the next level, I think.
Yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about the need to innovate, right?
Yeah.
You know, us as lean people and CI practitioners, we coach that innovation is critical. You need to do it. You need to continue to bring increasing value to your customers.
Yeah.
And I'm one to believe that we as practitioners need to continue to innovate on our own operations and our own ability to bring value to the market. So it sounds like you're doing a lot to really sort of lead in that space, which is great to hear, actually.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, you know, I think you just hit the nail on the head with regards to what is Kaizen.
Right.
Kaizen is your ability to continually innovate the complexity of what people have created to make it even simpler.
Absolutely. Right. And more effective.
That's right. And if you have to adopt some digitalization strategies for that to help you progress further in your efforts to make the world a better place, your world or the business world that you're in, it doesn't matter. By all means, do so. Just make sure you're linking it to the good principles and practices, the integrity that are already been set up before us.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make sure that those that led the path before us get the credit as well for making such great
progress.
Progresses into this business place today. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you know, if software technology makes your customer happy, then you've done your job, right?
That's right.
Extent.
Yep.
So
that's right.
You know what? You know, we all have learned a ton. That's a ton body of knowledge and work that came out of Toyota, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, a lot, yeah.
Our forefathers studied Toyota deeply and thoroughly. In the industry, continuous improvement industry, there's sort of a bias against technology, especially software technology.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but
at best, it's like a neutral. At worst, it's a no way, no how kind of a attitude.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I know you've been an adopter of technology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about Toyota also. I'm curious about how you got to that point, but I'm also curious about how well Toyota has adopted technology within their plants and sort of what's your latest thinking on that topic?
Well, let me just share some pretty, I think, profound insight shared recently by Toyota. I'm not sure if you're aware that the Toyota production system has gone into what we call TPS 2.0.
I had not heard that, but glad to hear it, though.
Yeah. So if you remember TPS in itself, the core to TPS has always been, now we're only talking about that one circle out of the four, but has always been just in time, which is the tact system. You got to have tact.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand flow, continuous flow. And if you can't continuous flow, then you go into batch flow. And then if you can't do batch flow, you go into what is pull systems. Yeah. That's in a nutshell, that is the philosophy and the principles working hand in hand.
Yeah.
Whereas the Jidoka has what they call built-in quality,
yeah.
where you build in quality into the processes.
Right.
And then you also have what is called the multi-skilling, the multi-processing kind of capabilities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Hijunka is the one that levels the entire work out so that you minimize variation.
Yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
In the way people are doing their work.
Right.
So that still stays the same. But what is changing is this Jidoka concept of autonomation.
Yep.
There was a time in the late 80s and into the 90s and even into the 2000s where they were really getting heavy on a lot of automation. And what they realized is they needed to stay true to autonomation,
yep.
meaning their ability to still connect people and digital solutions together, not letting things happen autonomously.
Yeah.
They need to be happening together.
Yeah. And using technology to empower people as opposed to just replace people, right?
Correct. And one of the plants here in Japan has got the latest line for TPS 2.0. It's the Motomachi plant. They shut down for a year and they rebuilt the entire line, and they're constantly tweaking it and adopting the right solutions for the right things. Because if you go to any Toyota plant, you'll always see AGVs, automated guided vehicles. So that's a technology thing. You'll see the picking systems are technology driven so that you reach in, you get one, and it comes out. It says, boop, you're supposed to get two. You know, there's all these kind of pokey-yokey kind of systems that are being put in place using digital technology.
Is that right?
Yeah. And they're going to continue to grow with this, but they want it to be people-based. They don't want to get rid of the people. So that's where I think your tool is pretty powerful. Yeah.
I think so too. I think, you know what?
Yeah.
I need to hook you up with a free account. Let's do that. Let's do that today.
Okay. All right.
Appreciate the plug.
Yeah, let's do that right after this. How's that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you a continuous improvement coach, practitioner, or operations leader who just aren't seeing the results that you want to see from your continuous improvement efforts? You've been to the conferences, you've read all the books, you've used the tools, but you're just not getting the anticipated benefit. Perhaps your teams need to develop the habit of daily improvement. That's right, the habit of making improvements on a daily basis. If this sounds like you, then you should try the Improver Challenge. Within 30 days, develop the habit of daily improvements led by a certified continuous improvement coach. After you've succeeded the challenge, you can then become certified as a coach as well and get paid to coach others to develop this life-changing habit. And not only that, you can use the awesome Improver technology to help develop this capability throughout your enterprise and for your clients. Visit us online at improver.com. That's I-M-P-R-U-V-E-R.com to set up your free account and get started immediately.
So somebody needs to write the next book on this, because to me, this is the future. This is beyond lean, right? Because we all understand lean to be very manual. You know, the visual boards, the 5S, the root cause analysis, sessions, meetings with people.
Sure.
A lot of that stuff, as wonderful as it was, when COVID-19 yeah. hit, I'll be willing to bet that a vast majority of the companies, that was the first thing to go.
I would say to you that if you're a consultant prior to COVID, you probably spent 80% of your time on site and 20% of your time off site. And you did some virtual conversations, some virtual engagements with the client. I think with COVID, the consulting world has changed. It will be at a minimum 50-50.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it might even be less than that on site. Okay.
That's going forward, right?
That's right. Going forward as we reemerge from this COVID thing, which I think everybody needs to have a plan to rebound, rebuild, and reimagine their business. Mm. So rebound, which means how do we get back to some sense of normalization? And with the volatility in the market, the uncertainty of demand and all those type of things that are out there, that normalcy is going to be unique now. Okay. Therefore, that second piece where you're going to rebuild, you're going to build in solutions, techniques, opportunities to help you get by this very volatile period. And then you're going to actually reimagine your business as well. You're going to start saying, why did we do this? Why do we have this many? Why are, you know, you're going to ask all those great, you know, five why questions about your business so that it's more flexible and more agile to the market. Now, I'm not talking about agile as the software kind of system that's out there that says, oh, you got to use agile. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your capability to be fluid into the marketplace.
Right.
Yeah.
And embrace change, really, right? Because that's what it comes down to.
That's right, yeah.
The world has changed.
I think AI augmentation is going to be in there. I think there's so many solutions out there that could benefit organizations, small, medium, and large. But what I think lacks the most right now, Calvin, if I may be honest, is that I wrote an article just recently called The Versatility of Lean, Now More Than Ever. It didn't get a lot of hits on LinkedIn, and I think I know why. Because nobody wanted to hear the message it was sending. But if you would allow me to share these 3 points, these 3 steps to reemerge out of this thing, I'd be more than glad to. I just don't know how much time we have.
Hey, man, be my guest. I want you to get that out there because it needs to be talked about.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that because for me right now, if you were to ask me what do I see as some of the biggest challenges out there, I think the biggest challenge for most people that go into organizations to help improve the organization is this lack of strategic imperativeness for lean. How are we supposed to use lean to make our organization better?
Yes, man.
And it's about integration. It's about creating a system that can integrate both operations and support in such a way that lean is the linking pin to
that's them. Golden because a lot of folks, what I think a lot of people don't put the two and two together is that Toyota, the reason they went down the track of what we now call lean, I don't even think they ever called it lean.
They never did. Yep.
Is that they were trying to win in the market. They were trying to grow the top line. And they realized that by doing the things they were doing in operations, it enabled them to grow and reach their growth objectives.
Absolutely.
But if you look at the way a lot of companies approach it, especially in the US and probably other places in the world, is they look at it straight like, let's just cut the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think in doing so, it becomes a distraction.
Yeah.
It becomes a distraction from what the company's really trying to do.
But let me maybe throw some milk on that a little bit, okay? Meaning, I agree with you that many people address it as a cost issue. But the reality of doing a lean transformation and having this strategic imperative with it, it's about saying, I must give my company oxygen. Mm. And oxygen to my company is cash.
Right.
I have to be able to manage that well. And if I don't put a strategic initiative around it from the highest level and incorporate all these low level type of bottom up approaches as well, I will never be able to stay in business over the long term.
Right.
And that's what Toyota does so well. That's why they have a 50-year plan, a Hoshin, a 3-year Hoshin.
50-year plan. Oh my gosh.
They actually have a 100-year one. So they're not thinking about going out of business. This is plan A and it will stay plan A.
That's crazy, man. I can't get some people to talk about their 100-day plan, let alone.
I know, and that's sad. So then it brings me to that second piece, that second step, if we're going to reemerge from this and the way we do business. And that is, we've got to stop cherry picking our digitalization stuff. Mm. We need to also adopt a strategic perspective to it. Mm. It's an umbrella. Industry 4.0 is an entire umbrella. And not every organization needs all of these widgets that are out there to help them move to the next level.
Right.
They need to strategically say, for our business in this year, this digitalization solution will help us get to this point.
There you go.
And then we will revisit that again, which we call a reflection or hindsight. Mm. Yeah. So I know people who have great MES systems or CMMS systems that are out there. They're fantastic systems, but they're actually not helping the whole organization move. They're only helping a component of the organization.
That's right. Almost like isolated improvement.
Right. And so that's why I think you also have to start visualizing what are your Industry 4.0 needs, because it's going to revolutionize the business. This is the fourth revolution, right?
You know, when I think Industry 4.0, I think a lot of manufacturers and companies thinking about, you know, technology, it's difficult for them to make the connection, right? Because there's artificial intelligence, there's machine learning, there's IoT, there's all these things out there, and the tech industry is saying you need these things. But as a company, you almost got to look at it like, let me look at the problem that sits before me right now, and let me figure out how to solve it. Right?
You sound like my brother from another mother, because that's exactly. Exactly what needs to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, man. IoT for a manufacturer is like iron for a shoemaker, right? Mm. For a shoemaker, iron is useless until it's fashioned into a hammer or something, right?
That's right. Or a little pin.
Or a little pin or something you can use. So there's the raw material. That's IoT. That's machine learning. That's all these technologies. And then there's an application that you can actually use to solve your problem. So you know, for the company and for the leaders making these decisions, I guess the thing they got to think about is, what's my problem? Like, what am I trying to accomplish and what's my problem? Now let me go find a solution to that problem.
And one that you can simulate with first, test it out, make sure it provides the success that you seek.
Right.
And again, this should also be connected to your purpose of lean, your strategic imperative, because it's about giving the company that oxygen to continue to be successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing that margin.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it is. And then when you actually break it down, you know, sure, there's, you want to motivate people. Sure, they want to share their ideas, and sure, they want to grow the improvements that they're working on. I'm not saying not to do that. I'm just saying there are some things you just got to make sure are project-based that give you the big bang for the buck to keep you going.
Yeah. There you go. Man, I love that.
And that's in both of those. Yeah, the last of the issues that I'd like to sort of say, the steps to reemerging out of here, is people keep forgetting that TPS, and when I say TPS, I really mean the Toyota Management System, is a people system. It relies heavily on the creativity, the scientific problem-solving capabilities of their workforce, as well as the ability to have that interpersonal skill set to communicate at different levels within the organization.
Hmm.
And if you ever go and you look at the, I don't know what it was. There was a couple of days ago, I was looking through something. I saw the World Economic Association or something of that nature had this 2022 skill set outlook.
Hmm.
And in that outlook, what are they looking for from now till 2022? The skills have totally changed.
Yes, it has.
And so they're looking for creativity. They're looking for the ability to adapt easily and, you know, and not question everything, but rather go through a scientific problem-solving methodology to resolve
there
issues.
You go.
Yeah. We got to really tap into that, because people are the key to the future. It's not the actual systems for the future, because people will always be there for those systems.
Well, yeah? You know, systems don't decide the future.
They don't.
They don't decide. They don't create the future. People do that. And I think that's the difference. That's what's going to define what makes us human from technology. I think always is who is deciding what the future needs to become, right?
Yes, yes.
Who's deciding who gets power, you know, the politics? Who is deciding these things? Who is creating the future as opposed to who's just executing the present?
Yeah.
So, man, that is some powerful stuff. I really appreciate you laying it out there like that.
No, thanks for letting me share it, man, because
yeah,
this is just one of the mediums that I could use to get the word out. Because
absolutely.
I think what will end up happening if people do that, they'll have, seriously, a laser-focused kind of approach. Their solutions will be so much more creative.
Yeah, man.
They'll definitely create that oxygen. And last but not least, the commitment they get from getting people involved. See, my sensei, Isao Kato-san, told me this principle. He said, DJ, no involvement, no commitment.
Mm-mm.
It basically says, if you want people to help you in your business, to make your business better, to be those ambassadors for you, they've got to be involved.
Yeah.
You can't just tell them to do it. Give me this idea. You just keep giving me ideas, but you don't do anything with those ideas. They have to be involved with the idea and then the generation of the solutions that they're implementing.
Yeah? They got to be in the struggle with you.
Yes,
you
know? Absolutely.
They got to be in the struggle with you.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got like two more minutes here. Let's do a quick lightning round before we close out.
Okay.
I know you're a very learned man. Very learned.
Yeah, constantly. Yep.
Yeah. You got any book recommendations for us?
Oh, that's a tough one, dude. Yeah, I'll tell you what, real quick, two books that really changed my world are Execution, and it's by Ram Shriram and I think Larry Bosney.
I read that one. That is an excellent book.
I mean, it's how do you get everybody to execute, right?
Yeah, I love that book.
That gap is out there, right? And then the other one, and the reason I loved it is because it's really people-centric. It's about creating trust, and it's called Powerful Communications. That's what it's called.
Mm.
And it's by Phil Harkins.
Okay.
And it's great because if you really think about what we're doing today on this podcast, right, we're actually having a powerful conversation, because the key aspects to a powerful conversation is simply this. We advance some agenda. Both of us learned something from one another.
Right.
And our relationship got stronger.
No doubt.
You know, that's a powerful conversation. And you got to practice that.
Hopefully we're doing those things at scale with our listeners also.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, once this goes out there, I guarantee you, I'm going to be reaching to Mike 13,000 followers and say, hey, take a listen to this. Tell me what you think.
Good. No, that's perfect.
You know?
Oh, man, I got to add that one to my reading list, certainly for the summer, see if I can get through that before the fall hits. What do you got on your calendar? Are you doing any events that we need to know about, or how should people get a hold of you if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, so I mean, you can visit my website at www.makotoflowt.com, and I'll spell that MAKOTOFLOWLTD.com. But you can also do info@makotoflowlimited.com as well and get in touch with me that way. What's on my calendar right now is I want to get these joint ventures working the way they're supposed to, put out some new products with all these wonderful gentlemen. We've got software solutions for value chain optimization, coaching programs we're going to be putting out there. We're even doing, you know, Spanish and Latin America kind of videos. A lot of different things are coming. For me, my next speaking engagement is the Lean Six Sigma World Conference. I'm supposed to speak there.
Good.
Got canceled for March, or postponed, I should say, till August. And let's see if it goes. If it is, I definitely want to stop by Atlanta and see you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely do that. For sure. Keep building.
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. Well, DJ, unfortunately, all good things have to come to an end. They all have to.
Out of time.
So,
well, you did a great job, man.
Hey, I just want to say thanks for coming through. For your first podcast, you laid it down, man. I got to have you back on the show.
Wow. I didn't know how I was going to do on this, but we did it.
You're natural.
Let me say this to you in Japanese. Arigato gozaimasu. Mata aimashou. I basically said, thank you very much. I'll see you again.
Absolutely. Let's do it soon. All right. Thanks, DJ.
All the best, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today. This episode was brought to you by the good folks at Improver Technologies. If you like the show, you can find more just like it at improver.com. That's IMPRUVER.com, where you can learn more, do more, teach more, and transform your world. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.